This is North Shore Today for Thursday. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell. Welcome to our program. Along with Rick Moore, we're here to discuss some of the issues of the day. And welcome in our guest. Rick, who's on the program today?
Bill, we have Dr. Crystal Demain. She's a professor, an instructor at Endicott College at the Center for Art Therapy. And a delightful interview, a fascinating interview. She recently went to China, her second visit to China on behalf of Endicott, and she has a lot of information for us, for the general public. She'll be speaking tomorrow with Becca Keneally at, she'll be speaking on Friday with Becca Keneally at the Center for the Arts, a public presentation at noontime at the Center for the Arts, and she talks all about it.
Gotcha. Okay. Around the area, there's not a lot of breaking news. I see in the front page of the item, there's a couple of news stories. Linfield Fire Captain Michael Feinberg has accepted a position as the Nahant Fire Chief, so that announcement coming. And in the town of Swampscott, the item is reporting that the race for town moderator is shaping up to be a contested one as Michael McClung announced his candidacy on Tuesday. And McClung is a Swampscott resident, currently serves as the chairman of the town's Article 6 committee, focused on negotiation and other opportunities for cost savings and greater efficiency in the town. And so there appears to be, there'll be a race for town moderator in the town of Swampscott coming up.
Well, further north, not a lot going on here either, but the big news, of course, is a continuing saga of the fishing industry problems. New quotas cut deep for fishing industry. Once again, there's a huge dispute between what fishermen claim they are observing out on the water with stock being plentiful and what NOAA is saying, that stock is not plentiful and they're making even more cuts to the fishing industry, which is absolutely clobbering the Gloucester industry, what's left of it.
That's amazing. I guess, what can you say? We've talked about this before, and the situation, one of the issues was just recently was the monitoring of the fishing boats, in that the I don't know if it ever became official, but the government asking the fishermen to pay for these monitors themselves, which is an $800 a day ticket to monitor something like this, to monitor their catch. And so, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. And clearly, that is a major story up and down the East Coast, I would imagine, from Maine, New Hampshire, all the way down into the, I guess I'm sure it must be impacting other parts south of us too, along the region, in other ways.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that their waters are considered to be, depleted of stock. So I really don't know about that. But I know, I don't think the government is asking fishermen to pick up the $800. I think they're telling the fishermen they have to pick up the $800 fee. So again, that's another cause for consternation. And it'd be nice to see. Some science from both sides and see why this disparity.
Yeah. Well, on the political front, we are right in the almost in the not quite ground zero, because we're not New Hampshire for the next phase of the presidential race, but we're media market wise, a lot of media tends to go to Boston because of Southern New Hampshire voters. And I happened to tune in, Rick. I got home last night and I was flipping around and there wasn't a lot to watch, and so I drifted over. I had some time. I came down to do some work, and I flipped on the Democratic CNN town meeting, and that's when Bernie Sanders was talking with Anderson Cooper and then followed by Hillary Clinton. So I caught a little bit of Bernie, caught Hillary Clinton's interview, and they took the questions from the folks, and I guess they have another debate coming up coming up very soon. I should know this, but I don't. But I think they have another debate. Maybe they actually have an actual debate coming up tomorrow. Or as you call it, what do you call it, Rick? Not a debate, right? You call it
competitive interviews.
Yeah, competitive interview. So they might have a competitive interview. It'll be kind of interesting because I guess, this will be the first one without Martin O'Malley, the former Maryland governor who has dropped out of the race after Iowa. And so it'll just be two-on-two, or one-on-one, rather. Two-on-two. Come on, Bill. One-on-one in the next debate. But it wasn't the most exciting exchange it sounded like pretty much friendly questioners for both Bernie and for Hillary. I didn't see the whole Bernie thing, though. But I think, unfortunately, I watched the whole Hillary thing. That was not my plan for last night. Speaking of excitement, while you were at the hockey game, So, anyways, and we have a big basketball game. We'll tell folks about that on Friday night. Be interesting. We're branching out a little bit, trying to catch up with a you know, there's, when you talk about basketball rivalries around the area, there's Lynn English, Lynn Classical, there's Beverly, there's Salem. Now those games aren't played in the Northeast Conference the end of the year or the halfway mark because of they're in different leagues, I guess, now. Different tiers of the same league, but except for maybe Classical English. But no, those guys have already played for the. They're not playing again this year, as it turns out. So, anyways, it's just different than it used to be, and that's okay. I guess that's going to happen. But we have Melrose Wakefield on Friday night, live video streaming from Wakefield. We have a post up there with Coach Brad Simpson and several of his players. Rick, remember Sonny Lane? Remember that name?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. I believe he was involved in both communities, and I know that. He's good friends with Dave Smith, whom I taught with for many years at Gloucester High School. Dave, the former Gloucester High School basketball coach as well. Yeah, Sonny Lane, great coach. I believe he was AD for a while as well.
Yeah, and then went to Melrose and retired. Well, Brad Simpson, and this is how out of touch I've been for so long, was an assistant with Sonny for many years and then now has been a head coach for like 28 years at Wakefield High School. And so – he's been around for a while. He's retired from the day-to-day school, so to speak. He's he's still coaching, and learned his basketball from Sonny Lane. And Sonny's doing well, we understand, up in Maine. So it was great to catch up with him. And so Wakefield basketball went from Sonny Lane to Brad Simpson. So they've got a great tradition of basketball coaches. And we're going to check in on Melrose. We'll do a post on them as well. So we'll meet that basketball team. They've had a very good season as well. In fact, they beat Wakefield the first time around. They're both in that. They have a large small division in the Middlesex League, and so we'll see what happens. You know, it's funny. You know, I think back to those times, Rick, like the early '80s or whenever it was, late '70s, and we were covering high school basketball twice a week for WESX Radio. And it came to tournament time, and at that time, if you remember, ESPN was just coming on board, and college basketball, you know, had Dick Vitale and all these games, and then the NCAA tournament began to take off big time. It wasn't necessarily as big as it used to be, but thanks to ESPN for doing all these games and looking for programming during the year, college basketball just took off during that time. And I always used to compare, you know, whenever you picked teams in the NCAA tournament, I'd always look. If it's an ACC team, I'd say there's a team to go after and check. If it's an ACC team versus some other league, go with the ACC team when in doubt. And I always kind of looked at the Middlesex League that way as well. They were a very good basketball league. So we'll see what happens tonight. But again, these are in the smaller divisions. But Melrose-Wakefield, a rivalry, still very much alive and well with those two communities.
Yeah, Wakefield, Reading, Lexington all come to mind. And funny, Bill, I saw something the other day on college basketball coach Krzyzewski at Duke has missed a game or two, I guess, because of illness. And the last time he missed, I think he missed 21 games. The team went 2-19 without him at Duke. But curiously, I think he has over 1,000 wins in his college basketball career, and I believe 996 of those are at Duke. So he's got four more to go, and he'll have 1,000 wins at Duke.
Oh, my gosh. Well, he's like Jerry York at Boston College, great coach with the Eagles. Started coaching at Clarkson, a former BC. He played at Boston College, coached at Clarkson, went out to Bowling Green, and then came back and took over a floundering Boston College program at the time, and picked up his 1,000th win the other last week or so at UMass, and then they won on the Beanpot on Monday. So they're. You got BU and BC back in the Beanpot. I guess all's well with the world for a Beanpot final with Boston College and Boston University. So.
Well, not for Steve Krause or Mike Lynch, I guess.
No, I guess not. You're right. Yeah, they would. With you. All right. What we'll do here is we'll step aside. Rick's interview coming up here, and then we'll be back to talk some more just ahead here on North Shore Today.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and I'm in the office of Dr. Crystal Demain on the campus of Endicott College. And Dr. Demain, first of all, what is your title? Creative? Give me the thing before I mess it up.
Associate Professor of Creative Arts Therapy.
All right. We're going to go backwards here. We're going to start at the top and then work our way backwards. What is creative arts therapy?
Sure. Creative arts therapy is an umbrella term for a profession that includes a variety of different professions that include the use of the arts and therapy. So this is music therapy, art therapy, dance therapy, therapeutic writing, and drama therapy. And each one of these is in its own individual profession with certification boards and conferences to attend and things like this.
It sounds like it covers such a broad scope, just the word therapy itself, and I'm guessing it does in terms of what your students can go on and do from here. Can you give me an example of what a student might do in terms of either music therapy or whatever it might be, art therapy?
Sure. Well, here at Endicott College, we only offer this bachelor's degree, and so one generally needs a master's degree in order to become licensed, except for in the field of music therapy, which you can practice at a bachelor's level. But Endicott does not offer that at this time right now. So generally, our students will go on to graduate school within the field of the arts therapies, maybe expressive arts therapy or art therapy. And some students go and will start it will open a studio and use the arts to have open studios with people. Some students get involved in just studio art work and might open or work at a gallery or work at a school and bring the arts to the school without going into clinical therapeutic work.
If we have any high school kids who tune in, and I don't know that any of our hockey players would be listening to this interview, but they might, what kind of things would kids in high school be interested in order to look into this? What would draw them to this?
Sure. If a person who's in high school has sincere interest in helping people and using the arts and creating connections with people through the arts, this might be a great field to look into.
Okay. All right, let's go backwards. You have a presentation coming up with Becca Keneally on Friday that fascinated me when Joanne Waldner sent me the press release, and we're going to post that also up on the website. So we're going to go backwards before we get to that, and tell us a little bit about your background, you know, how you got here to Endicott College and the road that took you here. And I know in our pregame warm-up we talked about Rockport High School.
Yes, sure. So I graduated Rockport High School in 1996, and from there went to study at Berklee College of Music, where I earned a degree in music therapy and built a private practice based on that bachelor's degree, and then went on and got a master's in counseling psychology, and then a PhD in expressive arts therapy, and then became a registered expressive arts therapist. And so that really brought developed my interest in integrating all of the arts and therapy and focusing research on undergraduate pedagogy in all of the arts, using all the arts and therapy, as well as with clients and exploring the use of this across the world. And this is what led me to my presentation.
I have so many questions to ask before we even get to that. But did you have a specialty in music at all when you went to Berklee?
Sure, yeah. Berklee only offers a Bachelor of Music degree. But now at this point, well, when I was there, it was only a bachelor's. Now they offer Master's in Music in a couple of different areas of study. So I was there with everybody else earning a Bachelor of Music, and my major was music therapy.
Okay. And were you a singer, a composer, a writer? What drew you there in the first place?
I was a flute player.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you
and
go.
So in Rockport, I played flute in the school system, and I played flute with my dad's band, and I played flute with the Rockport Community Legion Band.
Was your dad's band a rock band?
That's right, yes.
All right.
Yep.
All right. I'm a fan of the Moody Blues, and they got a major flute player on all their stuff. Okay, so let's go forward now. And Joanne Waldner mentioned in her press release that you took a recent trip to China, I believe, in related to your field and your presentation. So tell me about that.
Sure. In October, I went with a couple of my colleagues to present at the International Expressive Arts Therapy Conference in Hong Kong. This conference is biannual, so it happens every 2 years, and this was the 11th conference of its kind and the first one in Asia. This was my second time traveling to Asia to present at a conference related to this field, and my first time going to Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. What other things were at that conference? Do you go over and take notes also and go to other exhibits and presentations?
Sure. I went as a participant and also as a presenter. Some of the things that were presented at this conference were quite diverse. It was an expressive arts therapy conference, so people were coming in and sharing the use of the arts in all different forms. So our keynote speaker, Daria Halperin, who is a dance therapist, had us, the whole group of 400 attendees, moving and giving aesthetic feedback to her movement. And then a variety of different workshops that focused on everything from neuroscience and the arts therapies to more existential perspectives and some theoretical perspectives in the field.
I thought math was tough, but whoa, my head is spinning with this stuff. Is technology involved in any way?
Sure. There's technology used in terms of creating adaptive equipment for working with individuals with different types of needs, in creating different visual art forms, musical art forms, and other art forms as well.
Oh, my goodness. So what will you be doing on Friday? What will you be showing or telling? Mm-hmm. I obviously don't give the whole thing away now, but a quick summary.
Sure. I'll be talking about traveling to Hong Kong, a little bit of the Hong Kong culture, how that differed from my experiences in mainland China, and also how traditional Chinese medicine and its Eastern roots plays a really deep and true role in the field of the Western approach to the arts and therapy.
How did you first understand or get involved in art therapy? Where did that come from for you? How did you see this as a possibility for a life's work for you, and that that it's really important?
Sure. When I was in high school, I had a sincere interest in art and music and photography, and I was also interested in helping people, and so I thought about nursing, and I thought about being an art teacher, and I thought about being a music teacher, and then I went to my high school guidance office and looked in the Peterson's Guide of Professions and stumbled upon music therapy, and I said, wow, this exists. I can't believe this exists. And I went for it.
Excellent. That's a great story. I always tell my kids, if you can find something that you love to do that also fits your talent, you've got it made, because that's what it's all about. You know, I've heard of animal therapy. I've seen, living in Essex for a time, I've seen challenge people come over and ride horses and things like that. The arts play a role in maybe, I'm thinking cognitive awareness, quieting people down, getting the senses, whatever it might be. But is it also something that is can be long-lasting? They can take it back after a session in art therapy. The idea would be to take it back and continue with your life and integrate that and help you progress?
I would say that's a goal for many people, and therapy can occur short-term or long-term. Mm-hmm. There were people who were clients of Freud, the father of psychology, mm-hmm. who were in therapy on Freud's couch for years and years and years and years as his analyst. So, the goal is for people to gain insight into their own personal lives, to gain skills, and some of the skill areas that I commonly look at are development and communication abilities, cognitive abilities, motor skills, maybe in some cases, social skills, connecting with others, emotional skills, and creative enhancement.
I had a class teaching teachers that was about astronomy, and it was no science requirement. But I had a photography teacher in that class, and she did one thing, and I'm just wondering if this is analogous or parallel to what you do. She brought in a photograph that she gave to all of us I think it was about a wave crashing in the sea. And it was a beautiful photograph. She said, but think about the fact that this is two-dimensional. You can't get the feel of the feel of the breeze. You can't taste the salt air. You can't get the feeling of the humidity or whatever it might be in this two-dimensional photograph. And so she made us actually go into that photograph. So I'm guessing that kind of thing extended and expanded is what you do.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We come in looking at these arts approaches as a multi-sensory experience in order to engage all of the senses, in order to engage the whole self. And I come from a background in neurology and also in a wellness model, so looking at things holistically and engaging the social self, the cognitive self, the mind, body, spirit, you could use that language, the id, ego, superego, or the biopsychosocial whole self is part of this engagement. And do you think about, one might think about playing music or looking at this wave image that you mentioned, and, we're engaging sight, we're engaging our visual, we're engaging our auditory, our tactile, our olfactory, and this proprioceptive sense and this vestibular, this whole body engagement, this motor engagement. So this engages the whole brain and engages the whole body.
Fantastic, fantastic. All right, I guess my final question would be, is there a relationship in the practice? I know that you're not in a practice now, you're teaching, and in the practice, is there a relationship with, I don't know, personal care physicians, with psychologists or otherwise, that patients could be referred to this kind of therapy?
Sure. There is a lot of co-treatment that occurs. There are some centers where somebody might get a referral to an art therapist or a music therapist. Similarly, in these fields of the arts and therapy, we might do a co-treat with a physical therapist, occupational speech therapist. There can be treatment teams if one works in a school system with a teacher, a school psychologist, maybe a school adjustment counselor, a psychiatrist. So there's team models and referrals and these connections as well.
I lied. It wasn't my final question. I got one more.
Sure.
You're talking to high school kids now. You're going into a high school. Let's go into Rockport High School, and you're going to tell them who you are, where you're from, the great success story that you have. And there are a number of kids there who are okay academically, but they're artistically inclined, and there's nothing there. They don't know about this. So what do you tell them?
I say keep honing your art skills, because that is what is core to this field. You need being able to access the arts to move through you without ego, to help people. So working on those skills, and then cultivating the idea of using the arts with other people by going and maybe doing an internship or community service work with different populations of people that might be in need of different whatever human needs exist in life, and we all have different needs. So exposing yourself to working with people in these areas and keeping your art skills.
And maybe check out the Endicott College catalog.
Check it out. Yep.
Dr. Demain, thank you. That is Dr. Demain at Endicott College, and I'm just overwhelmed here. This is MSONewsSports.com.
Welcome back to North Shore Today. Bill Newell, Rick Moore, and Rick, great interview. And we just remind folks in sports here, we have the basketball game tomorrow night, Friday night. Melrose at Wakefield, 7 o'clock game. And by the way, the Melrose girls and the Wakefield girls are playing in I think it's about a 5 or 5:15 game over there. So they've got the doubleheader thing going there. I know Hamilton Wenham did that the other day, I think with Ipswich, when they were playing over at Hamilton Wenham. I like that. You know, it's not always practical, I guess, but it's kind of a neat thing to do for the schools to have those doubleheaders, have the girls' varsity play before the boys, or vice versa, however they want to do it. But anyway, that's our broadcast game, live video streaming on Friday night from Wakefield High School, Melrose at Wakefield.
We have our hockey game posted from Wednesday night, a mismatch, really, Marblehead and Lynn Jets. It was 1-0 after one, a very competitive first period. But Marblehead poured in 6 goals in the second period, so that game is posted. The Headers play Saugus to round out their conference schedule on Saturday. 12:30 start at the Rocket Arena. Lynn plays for the Northeast Conference South title at Gloucester on Saturday at 6 p.m. Sadly, a prior commitment won't allow us to broadcast that game, Bill, but that's for all the marbles for Coach Joe Conlon and his Lynn Jets, who are sure to a rebound on Saturday. They'll certainly put this game from Wednesday night behind them.
One other note, speaking of live video streaming, we're going to do a girls basketball game on Tuesday night, and that'll feature two of the area's top girls basketball teams, St. Mary's of Lynn versus Revere. Revere has been the standard in the Northeastern Conference for the last several years under Coach Diana Finn. And Jeff Newhall's done a great job at St. Mary's for a number of years, won that state title a couple of years ago. So anyways, there we have that game for you on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock from St. Mary's. So we have those will be our two live video streaming games. And then the season kind of is winding down, the regular season. And before you know it, well, in a couple of weeks, it'll be playoff time.
And don't forget to check out the one video on-demand post that we have at the moment, a game from December. It's Marblehead and Danvers. Give us your thoughts. Email us. Let us know what you think. And we'll have, as time goes on, we'll have a lot more of those on-demand video games.
Our,
that didn't sound right. We don't have video games. We have video of games.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, we have you get a little controller, go to our website, you know, and play our video games.
There you go.
Boy, how... That doesn't sound good, yeah. All right, well, that'll do it for us. So let's land on a down note here. Let's, because it's been up and down, mostly down, but it is. But here we go. We're wrapping it up. This is.
Speaking of down, just want to let you know, on Thursday morning, as we record this, 65 degrees, February 3.
Really? Wow.
This is the 4th. I don't even know what day this is.
But they're talking, you know, I didn't catch the weather this morning, but they're also talking snow before you know it here, a little bit of snow. So up and down. There you go. So we're like this winter. That's Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. This is North Shore Today on MSONewsSports.com.